welcome to Curmudgeon's Corner for Monday, June 28th, 2010. I'm Sam Minter. As usual, I have Yvonne Bo with me. Hello, Yvonne.
Yo, Bobo.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, Bobo. You know, I'll start out with, you know, we talked about a few topics we're going to talk about. We're going to talk about the iPhone 4. We're going to talk about McChrystal. If we have time, we'll do some other stuff. But, you know, it's halfway through the year already. How the hell did that happen?
It's almost 2011, like pretty fucking soon. And I still don't understand how any of this shit happened. I mean, I'm like, I don't know. Yep. I don't know. It's just flown by.
Yeah. And yeah, one other piece of business to get out of the way before we really get started. We had one piece of feedback over the last week.
Okay.
And this is in response to us anyway, whatever. You know, look, it's from our another loyal listener, Kelly, who is in response to our other loyal listener, Matt, saying that he'd listen to every show, just saying, since he listens to every show, hi, Matt. That was it.
Okay, well, there you go. Well, that's good. At least we were able to get them together. Okay, good.
There you go. And, yeah, we still haven't, you'd mentioned we should do something for Matt. We haven't actually talked about that since then, so maybe we still
will. Because, I mean, honestly, the reason we haven't done it is because we're idiots, okay? I mean, there's no other reason, you know, but, you know, bear with us, you know, something will happen, you know, we'll have to get together on this.
Yeah,
but anyway.
Our eternal gratitude.
That's a start.
Yeah.
Get him a hat.
A hat? A fez.
We could get like a hat made.
A special hat? A special Curmudgeon's Corner hat?
I would think that would be cool. We could get a couple of them for ourselves.
You know, if not a fez, maybe a beanie.
A beanie. I think the Curmudgeon's Corner should have beanies. I think that was more appropriate for our show. Especially now, since I've found out from a couple of my employees that apparently they're occasionally listening to the podcast.
Yeah, you gotta be careful what you say.
You know what? You're gonna get whatever the heck you're gonna get. They're gonna get special treatment because they're listening, so there you go. Okay.
And if anybody who works for or with me is listening, same goes for you.
Okay. Yeah, you know, we're all very kind and great people and stuff, and I don't know. I should just stop right now and just, you know, can we move on? Let's talk about something else.
Yes, so first let's talk about iPhone 4. First of all, I have been, you know, I mentioned before that I've been slow seeing iPads sort of in the wild outside of, outside of work. I've seen a couple at work where, you know, there are a bunch of geeks, but I haven't really seen any in the wild where you countered, you've seen them everywhere. But I will say,
yes,
even though they only started becoming available a few days ago, I've already seen a bunch of iPhone 4s in the wild.
Yes. I haven't seen one yet.
So
I must have been.
I haven't been out that much. Yeah, the first one I saw was someone waiting for a shuttle bus, and it was a work shuttle bus, so it is in the community of geeks. And then I saw that person later, and I actually talked to them a little bit about their iPhone. But then I was at a little just random bakery kind of thing, getting like some lunch over this weekend, and saw another one. And I mean, I've been seeing these things popping up, and I've seen a few more just sort of, you know, I look over at somebody like on their phone and I'm like, that's an iPhone 4. That's an iPhone 4. That, you know, they are selling a crap load of these things, you know, and they are showing up pretty quickly.
I understood the numbers. I mean, let's face it. I mean, they had 700,000 pre-orders was just through AT&T. I mean, Apple was still taking pre-orders even after AT&T stopped taking pre-orders. So, I mean, there's got to be more than a million already sold, at least.
I've seen numbers higher than that, I think, although I couldn't, you know, point it out right away. But, yeah, I mean,
I'm saying over a million. At least a million phones have been sold, at least, if not two or three.
Yeah, and I, you know, in addition to seeing them in person, I I've, you know, just looking at sort of Facebook, you know, there are a number of people talking about their new iPhones. And a couple people talked about waiting in line for the damn things, you know, and they're just, you know, they're going to be
just like you and I waited in line for our phones, right? Yeah. No.
You know,
not going to happen. Like, you know.
You know, and I'd mentioned the other day that, like, I was, you know, I won't replace it until my phone actually breaks and, maybe I'll drop it, whatever. You know, and so over the weekend, or a few days ago, actually, I guess it was Friday or something.
How hard you dropped the phone?
I did not drop it at all, but it was not turning on. And I was like, oh, crap, the thing's not turning on. And, like, I'm swearing up and down. I'm like, I swear I did not do anything to it. I did not do anything to the damn phone. After a little while, I was able to do a hard reset and get it to start up again. But, like, for a couple hours there, I was like, oh, crap, what the hell happened to my phone? Why isn't it starting? Blah, 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 blah. And, oh, you know, maybe I'll have to get an iPhone 4. But I swear I didn't do it on purpose, you know? But
it fired up.
But it fired up. So, yeah, no such luck for me. But, you know, for the people who have been getting them, it has not necessarily been an entirely smooth experience. For most people, I believe it has been. Most people have been getting these things and having no problem whatsoever. The biggest thing that sort of people have been making a fuss out over is it's unclear whether this is all iPhone 4s or some iPhone 4s or only some people or whatever. But apparently, if you hold the phone, at least in some cases, with your hand touching the bottom left-hand corner of the iPhone, where the two antenna bands sort of meet, you can make a connection between the two antennas and your signal will drop out. And so for people who've been having this, essentially what this means is if they hold their phone in that way, you know, it becomes essentially non-functional for any connectivity purposes.
Well, yeah, but I haven't seen that is happening to everybody. So I'm still going to withhold on that a little bit because, I don't know, you know.
And Steve piped in with a couple comments, Steve Jobs. One was, you know, don't hold it that way then, or something along those lines. And people have been making fun of that. More recently, he said something like, there is no reception problem, stay tuned. And there's some rumors that there will be a software update that tries to address this this coming week. Now, having said that, if it's a true hardware problem, it's hard to see how a software update would fix that. But it may be something where the software is overly sensitive to something and they can do something about it. We'll see.
Well, here's the one thing. I was reading about how the new antenna worked, and apparently the antenna would detect if you placed your hand or something, whatever, and it would redirect that the antenna would pick up the signals from other places on the phone. This is something I read this week. Now, the reason that may be the only reason why I believe where software update may be the case. It just may not be doing it as effectively as it's supposed to. Okay. So that may be why. Now, I've seen a couple of the reviewers that have gotten copies of them, and I also heard that in some instances that you were seeing that there were no bars on the display, but that didn't mean you couldn't make calls. And that apparently there was also an issue with how it was displaying the number of bars you had for signal. And so I don't know if some people are like saying that there's no bars, but they can still make a call. You understand what I'm saying?
There are people who've reported on them specifically calls being dropped. Yeah, you know, them being on a voice call.
Oh, but calls being dropped all the time.
No.
This is AT&T for crying out loud.
Yes, yes. But them being able to reproduce a call drop consistently by being on the phone and then touching the phone in that place and boom, call gone.
Okay, so that may be the case in that, you know, like I said, that I've heard that. So,
and one of the things they are seeing, though, is if you live in an area with a really strong, high, consistent signal that you've never had problems with, those people are far less likely to see this than people in areas where the service is marginal.
Which probably means, I actually, we have, I mean, I heard about so many other people in so many other towns, like, having problems with really with AT&T, and I got to admit that South Florida is not one of them. So, I mean,
yeah,
we have...
Seattle's quite pretty honest, good,
very,
too.
Very good.
I mean, basically, you hear almost all of the complaints people make about AT&T are in two places. New York
San
and
Francisco,
San Francisco.
New York.
Yeah.
Yep.
And, you know, those places are kind of big and have a bunch of, like, people who have influence, so it's kind of two sucky places to have that problem. But, you know, for the most part, you know, almost all the complaints come from those areas. And, I mean, even here in Seattle, I mean, yeah, you get dropped calls and crap. But, you know, I hear the people in San Francisco and New York are like, I can barely use my phone for the data stuff unless I put it on Wi-Fi. And half of all my calls drop and blah, blah, blah. And, you know, really bad. Anyway, it's time for break. Let's take a break. We will be right back, and we'll probably continue on about the phone for a little bit longer than switch over to McChrystal. So we'll be right back. And we're back. Any more thoughts on the phone? I mean, I've had there are a couple other problems people have mentioned, yellow spots that apparently one of the responses is it's a manufacturing thing that because they rushed out the phones really quickly.
You make a couple of million of these for crying out loud. I've heard so much whining about LCD displays and a spot here or there or whatever, and I'm just like, dude, get over it, man. They're not perfect. You will get a number of them that will have spots or shit on them. I actually, as a matter of fact, on a computer I'm working on right now, I've got this display that has spots on it, okay? I didn't notice until about a year later.
And I mentioned my new iMac that I got this March or whenever it was, you know, has a dead pixel that, you know, frankly, I don't notice it very often anymore because, you know, I'm testing real quick to see but you know, yes, it had a dead pixel when I got it, one out of however many million pixels on this screen. It kind of bugs me. And you know, I think most of the LCD manufacturers, and Apple here in specific, you know, if you really bitch about one pixel, they may replace it under warranty. But for the most part,
but
the policy
is
you have to have
a
bunch of them.
Number of pixels. Right. That's right. It's just not – one pixel just doesn't cut it. I mean, I'm sorry, but it's just – no. No. All right? Just get over it. I'm just with yellow spots.
Yep.
And you know, you know, when you're making a million of these, a number of them are going to come out probably with spots or stuff or whatever. You got a bad one, you got to go get it replaced. It's the way it works.
Well, I saw at least one report, like I said, saying that this was actually something where the glue they used to hold the glass on it just wasn't fully dried yet, and give it a week and the yellow spot would disappear.
Okay, but that could happen too.
Other thing that I've heard is people saying that despite the glass supposedly being super strength, amazing gorilla glass or whatever it is, a bunch of people are saying that, you know, these things are really delicate compared to the older iPhones, and you drop it from 1 or 2 feet, and it's all and the thing will smash.
Okay, well, we'll see. I don't know. You know, we'll see. I don't know. I find that hard to believe, but, you know. You know, like, one of these things, like, with a glass display like this, it just happens to be that you hit it in the right frickin' way, and, you know, you may drop the phone, like, a whole bunch of times, like I have mine, and like my wife has hers, but sometimes you just get the right frickin' hit, and boom, you got it, you know?
Yeah, and of course, depends how it lands and what it lands on, and... You know, right. whether you know, it lands flat or on a corner, you know.
But I've seen them, like, I mean, geez, I've seen them, like, I don't know. I've seen drop tests done on these. It just, well, it is what it is. I mean, you know, it's like,
the question in this case is not that people are saying, you know, electronic devices should be indestructible. It's that this is apparently more fragile than earlier iPhones.
I doubt so. I haven't gotten one, but I'll let you know after that. But I doubt so. Looking at the stuff that I've seen, here's a reason why. I mean, I'm looking at the back of mine that is a plastic one, and it definitely has a number of scratches. Yeah. And it's 6 months old. And plastic is actually far easier to scratch than the glass. The glass itself that I have on display has no scratches at all.
Right.
So can somebody manage to scratch the glass, and maybe they did it faster than they did with their own old phone? Absolutely. On average, is it easier to scratch the glass than plastic? No. So, I don't know. We'll see. I don't know. I don't know. It's kind of funny, you know. I see there is... I mean, I don't think that... What the hell happened with Apple, like, over the last few years? It's so funny. I think, you know, you and I, years ago, I mean, because we've owned Apple equipment for a long time, and we've always been interested in technology, whatever. We would always watch these keynotes and find out what happened and whatever, and, you know, because this is what we were interested in, whatever. But nobody else gave a shit about any of this. Well, of course, we always talked about it, but nobody else gave a damn. Now, it's like... A phone is launched, for crying out loud. I've never seen, I'm like, oh my god, all these comments, all this stuff. I mean, I had my phone, I got a problem with it. I'm like, okay, they just shipped a million of them, and okay, one guy had a problem, and now it's like, oh my god, the world's falling. I'm like, okay, oh my god, I don't know, this is just kind of weird. How this whole thing with every product launch has been.
Well, yeah, and you know, I saw one article earlier too, and I couldn't place it. Sorry for anyone who wants to look it up. My bad. But, you know, talking about how they're, you know, doing surveys of people as well on things like, you know, do you own a smartphone? Would you consider using a smartphone? How many of your friends use smartphones? And they would, like, right. do these surveys, and people would be like, yeah, no, I don't know anybody who owns a smartphone. And then they ask... I don't know anybody who owns a smartphone. And then they ask, well, how about iPhones? And then everybody raises their hand.
I don't. Oh, that's funny.
Because the thing is, nobody outside of the tech geeks and the people who follow these things, you know, nobody's
They don't call it a smartphone.
They don't call it a smartphone. They don't recognize it as a category of things per se. It's just, oh, yeah, iPhone. Yeah, of course. Of course we, you know, I know lots of people with iPhones. I have an iPhone. I didn't know what you were talking about when you said smartphone, you know. And it's because these things are becoming ubiquitous and something that, you know, is, it's not, you know, the geek toy that only, you know, the oddball geeks are dealing with. This is now, these kinds of things, be it iPhone or iPad or whatever, are things that, you know, everybody sees and knows and has and, you know, is much, much, much more mainstream than any of these things used to be. I mean, in the old days, like, you know, if you had, I was doing Trio stuff, and, you know, you had the Windows Mobile smartphones, and at one point I had, not a phone kind, but, you know, an iPack organizer and, you know, a Palm 3 or whatever the hell I had, you know, and these things were the things that, you know, only people really in the technology area or into this kind of stuff really dealt with. Like, this is not something that you would see, you know, Joe Blow public dealing with. That's not the case anymore. You know, these things are all over the place.
No, I agree. I also can I you know, talking about the our geekdom in this. I will talk about the fact that I got, you know, I loaded the remote application from Apple in order for you to be able to control your music.
Oh yeah, okay, I've been using it forever. Yeah.
Well, you've been using it to control what, the computer, I guess?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, here's the one thing I gotta.
I also have an Airport Express hooked up to speakers, so like.
Well, that's the thing. Here's the one thing now, because I have a laptop. Okay. You know, if you tried to use it to control a computer, unless you had your laptop open all the time, I usually put it to sleep. It's not so great. Now, the one thing is, I realized, oh, I could control the, my Apple TV.
Yeah.
Right. And I control the Apple TV, and you know, and it also I forgot that I put an Airport Express in my bedroom, so I plugged it into the sound system I have in the bedroom, and I plugged it into the sound system I got in the living room, and so now I could, you know, without the computers turned on, I could just control the music everywhere. Yep. It's like so it's working. I must admit, I'm so happy with it. It's really cool.
Well, the other thing that is cool about that system that, you know. Just the Airport Express plus the remote plus Party Shuffle is that, like, I'll put on my music streaming from my library, but the other people with iPhones in the house can make requests. Yeah, so it's limited.
Oh, yeah?
It's limited to the library I've chosen, but, like, they can use their iPhone remote app, pick the song that they want, and make a request for it, and whatever things have the most requests will go next on the Party Shuffle list.
Now, that's awesome.
So now
I like that.
And it's pretty cool. Like, just, you know, me and Amy and Brandy, like, refuses to actually make requests. She'll just listen to whatever I have on. But Amy will, like, hates most of the stuff I have in my library, but likes a few things. So she'll pick the things she likes. They go to the top of the list, and no problem, you know. But, you know, I could see this being really cool. You know, they call it Party Shuffle for a reason. If you were actually having a party and you had it streaming,
everybody
makes their requests, and automatic, and whatever gets the most requests goes to the top of the list and gets played next, you know. It's pretty cool.
I like that.
You know. So.
Yeah. So anyway, all right. So there it goes. So
okay, another break. I think we've talked that out. It's time for your poem of the week. Please enjoy your poem, and, you know,
you will be poemized.
Yeah. Be poemized. Enjoy. I you know, it'll be fun. It'll be exciting. It'll be whatever. And when we come back, we'll be talking about Stanley McChrystal.
Your buddy. Your pal.
Sorta. Anyway, we'll be right back.
This is the Curmudgeon's Corner Poem of the Week, brought to you by Notel Motel.
Don't Go There, by Bernadette Geyer. Don't go there, she said, and I didn't. Lordy, though I wanted to. I'd have followed her down that rickety staircase to the cellar of her memory, to the very walled-up ghosts whose voices she can still just barely hear. Nights, we didn't go anywhere. Lit up, hung out, just to get so far away from there that we could have been anywhere, or nowhere. It was always there. But more often than not, it was everywhere.
For more like this, go to notelmotel.org with a new poet each week and a new poem every weekday.
Okay, we are back.
Well, let me do a recap on your buddy and pal, Mr. McChrystal. When he was named, you expressed your reservations on this individual.
Yes.
Specifically because you had worked with a relative of his, brother.
I had worked with two of his brothers, in fact.
Two of his brothers, and you were just quite apprehensive.
Let me put it this way. I have said repeatedly every time I bring this up that it is, of course, not actually fair to judge anybody based on the behavior of their siblings, because
very true.
You know, they are different people. They have different things going on. But from You know, but from everything I've read about this man, he seems like sort of a mix of the two of his siblings that I met. And without getting into too many specifics, one of them was a much, they had both been in the military as well. One of them seemed much more ingrained in the military culture. After he was active military, he worked with military contractors for a long time. But he seemed like basically, you know, an ethical, upstanding guy for the most part, with a few little quirks, you know, like one time we were driving home from a client visit or something, and he started talking about this story where, his neighbor's dog was getting aggressive and barking at his wife and stuff like that, so he shot it.
Oh, great!
Yeah.
Well, that's you know, I've had a barking dog over here. I was actually, since I'm on the board, I was going to have him have letters sent to the owner and find him. But I didn't consider the shooting the dog part. I mean, what a simpler solution. So I tell my wife about it after we're done. Okay. Yeah,
So anyway, I thought, you know, sort of, but, you know, for the most part, he seemed like a guy who had, even though that kind of stuff made me question his sort of overall stability.
You think?
You know, overall, he seemed to have a good sense of right and wrong, and was like upset when things were going on that, you know, didn't seem quite above board and whatever. The other guy was sort of the absolute epitome of your slick salesman type. Yeah, no offense, Yvonne. very clean, very, very polished, very charismatic. But at the same time, almost amoral, in that he would do whatever it took to make the deal, whatever it took to get his way, without really worrying too much about the consequences and what it did to people and what the truth was and things like that. So, you know, in the sense of product sales, and I know this is absolutely common in the certain type of area that they were in, but, you know, promising something that didn't actually exist yet, sort of on the grounds that it would exist by the time they needed to exist, was almost routine. You know, can the product do this? Well, of course it can. You know, whether or not it actually could at the moment being irrelevant, because it's software. You can change it. You can make it do that.
Right.
Anyway, I've always, when reading about Stanley McChrystal, General Stanley McChrystal, I've always felt like it seemed like he was somewhere in the mix of these two things. And I don't know whether that's fair or not or whatever, but it seems like, you know, in the end here, he did something stupid and off he goes. I mean, you know, there's the history behind him too. I mean, he was getting a reputation as being sort of one of Cheney's go-to guys and supporting the torture policies and things like that back in the previous administration. So I am not in any way feeling bad for this guy. Yeah, I'm kind of glad he's out of there. I understand the criticism that some people say in terms of, like, you know, pulling someone like this out of the war effort and midstream and what it means to that. But, you know, on the other hand, you know, I have no strong amount of sympathy for the guy. And, you know, doing the kind of comments that were made in the article, even though most of them, to be fair, were from his staff, not from himself. And for anybody who doesn't know, basically there was a Rolling Stone article where a reporter spent like a month with these guys. And at one point, they had a layover in France because of the volcano going off. They had a sort of unexpected layover. And apparently, during that layover, everybody sort of let their guard down some. And, you know, there was a little bit of drinking going on and some other stuff like that. And, you know, people made a bunch of disparaging comments about various people in the administration. And all of this was right out there in the article that came out. And basically,
Now.
Yep.
That let's put a couple of, but to add to this is the fact that, if I understood correctly, the article was given to him to review before publication, and he didn't think that any of that He didn't object to any of that being in the article. Okay. The other thing that
my understanding was he was not given the article itself, but rather he was given specific quotes. He was given specific quotes and said, "Is it accurate that you said this?" And not necessarily the quotes of all of his staff either, but his own quotes. And so, I'm not sure, you know, whether first of all, like, you know, if he's just being asked to verify, did you say blah? You know, if he said blah, he's going to say yes. And I think, you know, it gives a very different impression necessarily than, here's the article, go read it.
Well, okay, but here's the thing. The guy's a moron. I mean, I'm sorry, but you guys have a bunch of reporters in tow, and you go and you shoot your mouths off like this, and you think it's all okay. You're an idiot. I mean, you're an idiot. And it what it shows is a lack of judgment. And I'm like, if you are shooting your mouths off like that, it just shows, to me, it just shows a lack of judgment. That's what I thought.
Well, you know, there's been a lot of speculation and, you know, people looking at this from all angles, and some of it, you know, sort of conspiratorial. Like, I've heard, you know, McChrystal wanted to get out because he knows that this isn't going to work out. And so he'd rather be on the outside in a position where he can say, if you'd only let me in there for a few more months, I could have turned it around, as opposed to actually being there when it all falls apart.
It was his strategy that's being executed anyway.
Well, absolutely. This is one of the things here. This is a strategy, and they were criticizing Biden in the article because this is one of the things where McChrystal and a couple other people were really pushing this particular strategy. Biden was there saying, "No, this is stupid. This is not what we should do. Let's do something different. Let's get out." You know, and the president basically gave him almost everything he asked for. Not quite everything. He asked for like 40,000 troops, and Obama gave him like 30 or something. But, you know, he basically got what he wanted. He got his strategy. He got whatever. Obama did put this 18-month deadline on it. And that's one of the things that will be interesting to see here. And, you know, in a moment, we can segue to just talking about Afghanistan. He was criticizing various people who had lost the argument to him. He had won. You know, he had come
and
up.
And that's what I don't understand. That's what really is, like, bizarre to me. You get into a discussion. Obviously, people have different points of view. A point of view has arrived. You are actually given, you know, backed into your position, and yet.
Well, I mean, it's not professional, but if you're on the losing side of an argument, you can at least understand people like saying, "I told you so." Isn't working out. Or continuing to snipe.
But he was on the winning side of the argument.
I mean, even if you're on the losing side, at a certain point, you should do what it's disagree and commit. You know, you've said your piece, you've expressed your disagreement, but now the decision has been made, and so you put yourself behind it, whatever your original thoughts were. That's the right thing to do if you're in a losing position. If you're in a winning position, if you're the one whose strategy has been picked, you don't even have to do that. What is the point of sort of picking on the people who lost that conversation? Now, you know, part of it is, you know, some of those people are still involved in policy and they thought they were idiots and getting in the way and not effective, whatever, which is all fine, which is all well and good. The problem here is, of course, in most
where you were saying it shows no judgment of these people. I mean, I'm sorry, but you know what, I try to be very careful, especially in the places that I've worked, about – I may have certain opinions about certain things, or I may be upset about certain things, especially that's the worst thing that happens. I mean, sometimes, you know, you get angry about something and you can say some stupid comments, stuff that's really overboard, stuff that you really shouldn't say. But you know, you if you're going to do it, you better freaking do it in a place where you're doing it with in privacy with some people, and definitely not out in public. Okay? Yeah. Definitely not with a reporter in front of you.
And even the even in private, you have to be careful who you vent to.
Who you vent to.
I mean, there's another example of that that's gone on this week. Dave Weigel, I believe that's how you say his name, working for the Washington Post, made some disparaging comments about Matt Drudge and some other people on a quote unquote private mailing list for journalists. And well, it was all made public anyway.
Well, he's a moron.
And so
a private mailing list. Yeah, how many people? Jeez, crying out loud.
So yeah. So the point is,
dumbass.
You know, you got when you're bitching about people, just in general, when you're bitching about people, you want to be very careful who you're bitching to. You know,
that's right.
I mean, just as a general principle, you can apply this to your personal life just as well as you can to your professional life. You know.
Yes, absolutely.
And anyway, so McChrystal fucked it up. He's out. They put Petraeus in, which was an interesting move. A lot of people who are really worried about, you know, what'll happen when they get rid of McChrystal, when Petraeus was put in, were like, oh, okay, that'll work. You know, so, and there really weren't that many people, if any, really saying, you know, what McChrystal did was no big deal. It was okay. The best he got out of anybody was, yes, this was inexcusable, but we have to excuse him anyway because we need him for the war effort.
That was the best. Because that was the best. I didn't see anybody on any side of the political spectrum really defending him that hard at all for this stupidity. So, you know.
Okay.
Well, it is what it is.
So it's time to take another break. We'll be back. And let's we'll broaden the conversation to a little bit more about Afghanistan before we close up. Okay. We'll be right back.
The first way to health, said the CDC to me, wash hands to be safe and healthy. The second way to health, said the CDC to me, bundle up for warmth and wash hands to be safe and healthy. The third way to health, said the CDC to me, manage stress, bundle up for warmth, and wash hands to be safe and healthy. The fourth way to health, said the CDC to me, don't drink and drive, manage stress, bundle up for warmth, and wash hands to be safe and healthy. The fifth way to health, said the CDC to me, be smoke-free. Don't drink and drive, manage stress, bundle up for warmth, and wash hands to be safe and healthy. The sixth way to health, said the CDC to me, fasten belts while driving, be smoke-free. Don't drink and drive, manage stress, bundle up for warmth, and wash hands to be safe and healthy. The seventh way to health, said the CDC to me, get exams and screenings, fasten belts while driving, be smoke-free. Don't drink and drive, manage stress, bundle up for warmth, and wash hands to be safe and healthy. The eighth way to health, said the CDC to me, get your vaccinations, get exams and screenings, fasten belts while driving, be smoke-free. Don't drink and drive, manage stress, bundle up for warmth, and wash hands to be safe and healthy. The ninth way to health, said the CDC to me, monitor the children, get your vaccinations, get exams and screenings, fasten belts while driving, be smoke-free. Don't drink and drive, manage stress, bundle up for warmth, and wash hands to be safe and healthy. The tenth way to health, said the CDC to me, practice fire safety, monitor the children, get your vaccinations, get exams and screenings, fasten belts while driving, be smoke-free. Don't drink and drive, manage stress, bundle up for warmth, and wash hands to be safe and healthy. The 11th way to health, said the CDC to me, prepare dinner safely, practice fire safety, monitor the children, get your vaccinations, get exams and screenings, fasten belts while driving, be smoke-free. Don't drink and drive, manage stress, bundle up for warmth, and wash hands to be safe and healthy. The 12th way to health, said the CDC to me. Eat well and get moving, prepare dinner safely, practice fire safety, monitor the children, get your vaccinations, get exams and screenings, fasten belts while driving. Be smoke-free. Don't drink and drive, manage stress, bundle up for warmth, and wash hands to be safe and healthy.
For the most accurate health information, visit www.cdc.gov or call 1-800-CDC-INFO 24/7.
Okay, we're back. So Afghanistan in general, some of the implications of this are, of course, there's not all that much time left. There's another year left in the 18 months that Obama gave this strategy to quote-unquote succeed. What success means was never really nicely defined. Things right now are not significantly better than they were, when this thing started. Maybe a few gains in a few places, but there have been a few losses in some other places too. A lot of people did agree that one of the things McChrystal was doing right was imagine this. I mean, I don't know why anybody would have thought of this, but he had as one of his guiding principles, don't kill innocent civilians.
Oh, well, heaven forbid.
You know,
we could be concerned about that.
And some of the on-the-ground people actually, complained because it was tying their hands too much. But he was basically saying, look, for every innocent you kill, you create 10 new enemies. Yeah, so it's you really want to try to avoid it at almost all costs. Because that's one of the things that was happening fairly consistently, was we would go after some, terrorist base or whatever and blow it up. And then it turns out, it really was a wedding. We killed, 50 innocent people who were just gathering for a wedding, and half of them were children,
And the worst thing is that people, people having difficulty understanding why that is counterproductive.
So anyway, that's one of the things he was doing right. But, it's not clear that there's real progress being made, or let me put it a different way, sustainable progress, progress that could, continue to last without troops being present on the ground. I remember saying when Obama made this decision to give the 18 months and additional troops, I'm like, I know that it was sort of his campaign promise to beef up Afghanistan because that was the good war and Iraq was the bad war. And Iraq, by the way, the drawdown has been continuing and we're getting out pretty quickly there. Afghanistan, I always keep coming back to, the Powell doctrine. If you're going to go in somewhere, have absolutely clear success criteria defined, have full public support for what you're doing, and go in with overwhelming force, make it happen, and then get out. And it seems like, that was one of the big successes of the George H.W. Bush presidency. The first Iraq war and the fact that they went in, they met an objective, and then they left. Now, the neocons consider that the biggest failure of the first Bush presidency, but I think that's one of the key elements there, and it was abandoned in future administrations, and Afghanistan is a clear example of that. We don't have clear goals. There are occasionally, really abstract, things about, stable government that's friendly to us, blah, blah, blah. But, we don't have clear goals. We're not in there and have no intention of getting in there with a big enough presence to really sort of control the whole country. And, it'll be very interesting to see whether Obama sticks to his guns about the 18 months. Now, one of the key things there, though, was the promise was never, we will be out in 18 months. The promise was we will start a drawdown in 18 months with no specification of how long the drawdown itself would take.
Yeah, and the drawdown could be, we'll send 100 people out.
I heard one person on Washington Week, I think it was, make the comment, the drawdown's already started. McChrystal left. There's one.
There you go. There's one. We started a drawdown. There you go.
So, but I just see this, you know, as potentially a huge, huge morass that, you know, it would be very easy as we get close to the end of the 18 months, the generals or whoever will just say, you know, the situation's gotten a little better, but it's not stable yet. We need some more time. Or something like, the situation's a bit better, but if we leave, it'll go to hell. We need some more time. And, you know, it'll be hard to say no to that. Now, at the beginning of this process, Obama essentially said he would. You know, he had meetings where with a bunch of the generals, including Petraeus and McChrystal, where he basically said, now, at the end of this 18 months, nobody's going to ask me for more time, are they? And everybody said, no, of course not, Mr. President. But come on. You know? And I don't know. It just seems like the I don't see anything really good happening out of this thing that, you know, of having a presence on there. You know, get out, you know, continue to use drones against Al-Qaeda cells when you find them or whatever. But, you know, what actual benefit is coming out of the much bigger presence we have right there? And what do we actually see getting out of it by having folks there another year? I'm just not seeing it.
Listen, I mean, but it takes time. I mean, I don't know.
It takes time. Look, this is called the Graveyard of Empires for a reason.
I understand. I'm with you. I mean, I'd rather be totally out. I don't know. You know what? Look, it's like we'll cross that bridge when we get to it, I guess. I just, you know, I mean, if it's not working, I think at that time, it's enough time that we know if it's not working, it's not working. I mean, you know, we can make a decision, say, fuck it, we're out, we're done. You know, honestly, we shouldn't have been in the first place. I mean, well, we should have been there for a little bit. You know, there was one reason. It was accomplished, but I don't know. Then we fucked everything up. I don't know. You know,
well, you know, there's another dynamic that's going to come into play. A year from now, people are going to, I mean, given the history, the presidential race now starts one day after the midterm election. And that means by a year from now, we will be in the 2012 presidential race, you know, and there will there will be Republicans posturing for the nomination. If any Democrats think Obama's really fucking up, then there might be somebody trying to challenge him. But I kind of doubt that unless something really big happens, you know.
Right.
There'll be all kinds of dynamics going on there that are different. And it's going to be in a position where it's going to be very hard to say, you know, we're just gonna get out. Now, you could be careful about that. I mean, it's not like you have to like say, oh, we lost, we're getting out. You can fucking declare victory. You know? I mean, it's a very ambiguous situation. You can say, hey, look, we got what we originally came in there for. It's done, it's over. We're not gonna make Afghanistan, you know, a happy Western democracy. That's just never going to happen. That's not the goal.
We're not? Really? Oh, God.
You know,
you just crushed my dreams.
You know, instead it's going to be, but you can
say, Karzai is not Thomas Jefferson?
But, you know, you could say that, you know, look, we've decimated Al-Qaeda. They may still be able to do some stuff, but that's they're nowhere near as effective as they were a decade ago.
True.
You know, and now it doesn't take all that much to pull something big off every once in a while. But, you know, we've had a lot of effect there. We could declare victory and go home and put our resources in a better in a place that is more effective. And again, just like, getting
like,
the crew
like reducing our deficit, not spending like $500-600 billion a year in this shit. I'd like that idea.
It's not saying that you eliminate all involvement forever and ever. I mean, you know, like I said, you can still send the drones in when you feel like it, when there's a target. You just don't need to have a huge underground presence to try to achieve ambiguous goals that no one really knows what you're trying to get out of it anyway. I mean, the only thing that sort of makes sense is the one that's sort of the least palatable, which is what you really want is a permanent occupation there forever to be able to, you know, control the space and do what you need when you need to. And hey, maybe now that they've found all kinds of mineral resources, get our fingers in that, you know?
I like that part. Okay.
Yeah, that part is kind of good. You know, we need that lithium or whatever it is they found.
Yeah, that part. Yeah, I know that part doesn't suck. I'll take that part. All right. Okay. We've beaten up Afghanistan and everything to death. Okay. Let's wrap this puppy up.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay. I have two other things. I'm going to mention at like 2 minutes each. One is that I just wanted to mention, I'd been doing this years ago. I'd been doing sort of, you know, SETI at home and those kind of projects.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Yeah, I stopped a while back. And, you know, So have I.
I haven't had any, I mean, even though I have some computer I could be running it on, like with this desktop I use for the podcast, I haven't done anything.
And, you know, I'll be honest, the reason why was at some point in the past I got to the point where, you know, I needed my computer was so slow and so fucked up and whatever, I didn't want anything extra running on it at all. I briefly tried again in 2006 for a couple minutes. Apparently, I saw the records of it come up when I looked at it today. But I just installed it's BOINC, which I presume is pronounced boink. And if you Google it, you'll find it. It's sort of the natural evolution of the SETI at Home project was very specific on this on the searching for alien life and stuff. This is sort of a generalized container. You install it as a screensaver.
Berkeley Open Infrastructure for Network Computing.
There you go.
Okay.
You install it as a screensaver, but then you pick which projects you want to donate time to. And there are like dozens of these things. There's SETI at Home, which has existed for, you know, forever. There are also various ones doing like cancer research, trying to figure out how proteins fold. There are things doing, searches for gravity waves, which ties into I visited LIGO this last week, which is searching for gravity waves. And this is sort of what reminded me that these things exist. There are all sorts of these projects doing, you know, science, math, all kinds of different things for all kinds of different purposes and whatever. And you can pick which ones you want to donate resources to, and it can be all one, or you can pick like five of them and have them share, you know. So it's a very interesting thing. I just started running it again. We'll see how it goes. It doesn't use up time when you're using your computer. But when you aren't using your computer, it'll fire up your computer and use some fraction of the available resources to do these kinds of things for various kinds of research. We'll see how it goes doing it this time. But it seems like a lot of these research causes are really helped by having all of these people out there donating their unused computer time. So I just wanted to mention it. It's an interesting project. I'd suggest people go out and give a look.
I'm installing it right now as you speak.
There you go. And then the one other thing I was going to mention is, and I'll probably have more feedback about this next week, is that the iOS 4, which is what the renamed iPhone operating system that is on the iPhone 4s, but is also available for older iPhones, came out this week. As I speak, I'm going through the install process on my iPhone 3G, which may be a mistake because I have seen reports that while this update provides all kinds of really cool stuff in an iPhone 4 and a decent amount of cool stuff on an iPhone 3GS, on an iPhone 3G, it gives almost no new functionality. It gives one or two little things, but it slows it down significantly in some cases. At least that's what some people are reporting. We'll see. I'm installing it. Maybe it'll end up being a mistake. You know, some people are basically saying, I so regret doing this update because it made my phone so much slower. We'll see. I have been told that I cannot use this as an excuse to get the iPhone 4 if it slows down my phone.
Well, I will say that I did put it on my 3GS, and it's worked pretty good. I did notice a couple of things I wasn't too happy with. And nothing major, but I saw it was a little bit slow with my Bluetooth in my car. I don't know. I can't remember one or two things with some apps which I guess need updates. So I went, and my wife has a 3G, and I have not updated hers. Okay.
Yeah, from what I've read, the problem is on the 3Gs specifically. The 3GSs are okay.
Right. So what I'm saying is that I'll probably wait until it's a little bit more updated before I try to update my wife's phone.
Yeah, I'm hoping even if they screw it up, even if it does slow things down, they'll release a 4.1 or something that'll fix it. But yeah, I could have waited, but you know, I already waited a few days because I have a policy on my iPhones. I don't, when the updates come out, and this goes for the Mac updates, software updates too, I don't say, oh, the new update is up, I'm going to like go hit the button. I wait until the software update cycle picks it up automatically. So for the iPhone, it checks like once a week, and I have my updates on my Macs checked once a day. But I don't go out looking. I wait till it pops up and says, hey, there's an update available, and then I do it. So I'm doing this like 5 days after it came out. We'll see how it goes.
Cool. Okay.
Anyway, that's all I got. Thanks, everybody, for joining us on this week's Curmudgeon's Corner. As usual, email me at abelsmay@abelsmay.com with any questions, comments, thoughts, whatever. Tell your friends to listen. We like additional listeners. Always like additional listeners. And that's it. Tune in next week. Goodbye.
Thank you.
Okay, bye.